I'm Shan Rose. This is Straight From Rose, your front row seat to government, community, and all the in-between tea. Served, informed, not messy. So when it hits your timeline, you say it loud with your chest. You heard it straight from Rose. Thank you for tuning in for another episode of Straight From Rose podcast. This is Commissioner Shan Rose, and I am here to continue the great momentum of hearing from you all, figuring out how we create a better city community together. And, you know, I'm grateful for a lot of the guests who have come on the show to teach you how you can get involved, to teach you how you can create a better community. And hey, you might even call some of my special guests and tell them you need them in your community to make it better. Nice. So today I have the luxury of having Kyle Steele on the show. And the connection with Kyle is like...
Wait, did you just call me luxury?
Yes.
Yeah, the luxury. I like that.
The luxury.
I like being positioned like a Louis Vuitton.
The luxury.
Did I say it right? Louis Vuitton?
Yeah.
Or is it Louis Vuitton?
LV.
Or
right. So thank you for being on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for inviting me.
So it's funny. I've been going to... And I guess it's just this when you go to thing when things working are working in a community and you visit, and then you get to learn the mastermind behind. So I've been going to the conduit for a while,
right?
And I'm gonna let you talk a little bit more about it. But I've been there for multiple organizations,
yes.
In the community, and it's like it's a cool space, right? We're moving into this place where everyone doesn't need a big brick and mortar. Everyone
right.
doesn't, you know. That's not a thing. And, you know, it's cool. And then when I get to meet you, I'm like, okay, so the mastermind behind it. Okay, cool. So tell us a little bit more about it, your story and, you know.
Well, I'll tell you this. You've been showing up for stuff for quite a while. Actually, today I was working on this annual report for Rally, which I'll talk about. But in it, like we've used these pictures like on our website in these reports. And I was going through the report today and like selecting some of the media that we put in. I was like, wait, Commissioner Rose is all over the place in these pictures. Like you were showing up in pictures with like one of our former fellows who Josh Footman,
okay.
who was like doing like this block and lock thing around mortarless bricks, to bring down housing costs because it just didn't require a lot of that stuff that traditional stuff used. You were in that picture. You were in like some ribbon cut. Like you were just in a lot of pictures. It's like, oh, like we've been in the same spaces for a while, just hadn't formally connected like we have in the last couple of weeks. So, but yeah, I mean, I guess the question is like.
Talk about who you are.
Tell
my listener a little bit about who you are.
Yeah.
What brought you to the conduit and
right.
kind of go from there.
I think the first thing I want to just say is that I always say this is I always find it, I think I've said this to you before, but I find it amazing that I'm even sitting in the seat I'm sitting in today, considering like where I came from. Because although I didn't grow up in like District 5, I grew up in District 5 like environments. So specifically like Detroit. So like Finkel and Wyoming, that area I grew up in, which is like a really rough area, like growing up in Detroit, inner city, like all the metrics, single mom, father kind of like not around, et cetera, et cetera. And then just through some fortunate relationships and that I just kind of collided into for a variety of reasons, like I ultimately was able to get to the place I am now. And I think like at the end of the journey, when I look at my life, it's like the question is like, well, how do I navigate my life? Because that's the main thing. It's like, what's the operating system that I'm operate on? And what's the time, like in terms of the time that I have on this earth? Because I don't have a lot of time. None of us do, although we think it. It's like, what do I do with that time to be most effective? And for me, it's around helping people find and fearlessly move into the power of their unique story. And so, like, for me, that's the mission statement. And it's the statement that allows me to that I navigate and use to dictate what work I do and don't do. So for me, like the conduit, which is a workspace, is around that because what we're about is not only creating a workspace that works for people, allows them to show up places, to be consistent, to have a place that's predictable and safe to work at, but also it's around the community because what we care about is creating a interdisciplinary community, a community mixed with filled with different types of people who believe that their working lives get better when they come alongside of each other. And then, so that fits very well into my mission. And then like Rally fits very well into my mission because Rally just is a civic innovation platform. But more importantly, we're about trying to help the region address important social environmental issues that impact our city and our region and trying to make life better for people. And so that fits right into the mission, too. And so like those two in itself are like heavy hitters and like you can get deep into. But that's basically like who I am. Why I do the work I do and kind of like the lens in terms of like how I choose to work, what work I do and what work I don't do.
Okay, so it sounds like life experiences, lived experiences mm-hmm. made you determine like, you know, this is what I want to do. Was there a specific moment or experience that like pushed you to say like, I'm going to take this leap of faith and I'm just going to go for it?
No, I talk about this a lot on my own personal website and just in conversations. I think that oftentimes it's not like any particular experience. Mm-hmm. It's like a combination of things. And okay. So what I like to say is like, first of all, it starts with your parents. Like you're born into a situation that you had no control over mm-hmm. and born into a story. Like if your parents were crackheads, then that's the story you inherited, mm-hmm. right? Like whatever that is and all that comes with that, you inherit and as part of you, right? Okay. And then you have a bunch of experiences, good and bad. You have unique gifts and talents. And so for me, it's just like trying to like look at them, put all of that stuff on the table and just try to make sense of it. So it's not any particular experience. It's the cumulative. It's a lot of data sets that you put together to form a picture about what it is that you ought to be doing. And that for me, that was it. Now, how did that picture become clear for me? I think it was like it comes a point in everybody's life where they just say, hey, like, I want to do meaningful work. I want to do the right work. I want to use my time wisely. And so how do I focus? And so whenever you're at like that, I feel like when you're at that stage, at least for me, I was like kind of at that stage. I just didn't want to waste any more time. And so I got very serious. It's like, okay, first, like what's the operating system I'm gonna operate on the mission? And can I get excited about that mission and get behind it? And can I do work that helps me bring that mission forward? And then I just started a process of just trying to understand it. And here I am today sitting with you on Straight from the Rose, right?
So I think we're all trying to build a resilient, stronger, better, mm-hmm. cohesive Orlando. How does the conduit do that? Like, how does that collaborative spirit, and then why is it so vital?
Yeah, so... first of all, I like to tell folks that we built the conduit by mistake.
Okay.
We weren't looking for like a market opportunity. We were all doing our own thing. But the thing that we all had in common was like we were working independently and in silos. And when you're working by yourself and trying to build stuff by yourself, that's like a hard place to be and mm-hmm. not the right place to be. And so we created this thing where we're just like meeting up every second or every Tuesday of the week, every Tuesday, where we call it a co-working Tuesday.
Okay.
And it grew. And then when we thought about, well, why did it grow? It was because we recognized that the people there were getting this value. Like they were not only were their lives improving professionally, but also personally, because when we're in proximity to each other, we start talking and sharing knowledge and nuggets. Right. And so you might give me a tip that might make my life better. I might give you a tip that might make your work better. I might come alongside of your work. I might help you do things. And so we are the belief set that, isolationism, doing things independently is like kind of like a lie. That's what we believe, mm-hmm. right? And so therefore, like life gets better and we as humans are designed to be around other people, to be around other people, to gain the benefits of other people and for other people to gain the benefits of us. And when we do all that together, like that's we start moving, we start really doing cool things. And so for us, the conduit was like, how do we do that? And so when we started it, it was like, all right, we got a little bit of money. We can't compete with the big players in mm-hmm. the market like Regis, Industrious, WeWorks, et cetera. Mm-hmm. We knew that that would be suicide to do that. And so we were like, okay, what can we do differently? And we took a bet on maybe we should approach co-working instead of just giving people a sterile office and a desk and just being very, but how do we mimic what we experience in the coffee shops? And so how do we be more relational with things? And so we built a business model that was very relational based. And it ended up being a good bet because even today, we started off with $4,000. I just had a conversation with a guy recently today. He was like, well, how do you start business? I was like, the thing is, you just start with whatever you have. Mm-hmm. If you have one banana, then that's what you sell is one banana. Mm-hmm. And you try to sell it at a profit before it spoils. Mm-hmm. And then you buy two more bananas and you just keep flipping the bird like that, right? And ultimately, you just run into what you run into. And I think that that's important for people to hear that you just start wherever you are and build whatever you're building and just use the resources you have because you'll never have the resources you want to start. So that was the kind of the premise of just the co-working space in general is just like, how do we kind of create this relational based community where people can both thrive and they come alongside of each other and they're altruistic, you know, because they're like, hey, I want to help people improve their work and their lives and vice versa. And so that's how we kind of started. And since then, I mean, we're here 10 years later. We went, you know, I was looking at our numbers the other day. I think in our first year, and fortunately, we had the right partners, like we only earned like $30,000, right, in total. Like now we're approaching $1 million, right? And we're the longest lasting, largest co-working space in Orlando, at least downtown Orlando.
Okay. Congratulations.
We're happy about that, right? So if I can do it, y'all can do it. You know, anybody can do it.
So I think there's a underlying that I continue to hit, like I've heard from you, is that it's just like the old, you know, Nike's phrase, just do it. Right. And it kind of pivots to the other organization that you run, which is Rally. And I'm one of those where I live in a space. There are so many resources. Right. In the community. And one of the things that, like, although Rally's a partner, like the city of Orlando, the like meeting people where they are. Right. Just like the you all offer the basic intro to entrepreneurship.
You're right.
And I think that so many people see like businesses and how do I get there and, you know, what do I get there? And so, like, I want you to talk a little bit more about Rally and let the listeners really know what you did there.
Yeah. I mean, so the main thing that Rally exists is to be infrastructure that helps our region address priorities in terms of social environmental issues. Okay. A lot of these issues intersect operationally with municipalities and corporations. Mm-hmm. And so our whole role is like, how do we understand the issues? How do we, based on our regional partners and their input, how do we take those issues and then source solutions that are new and unproven related to it and bring them in? How do we build those solutions? How do we test those solutions and make sure they work here? And then last but not least, how do we scale those solutions right into the region? Because we can't move the needle on helping our region move forward if we don't have solutions that literally do that. So because of that, like that's the kind of like the process that we walk people through. But at the core of that, for at least the entrepreneur or the inspiring entrepreneur, one of the things that Rally understands is like I talk about this a lot. It's like starting a business is more than just filing an LLC on SunBiz, right? Mm-hmm. Open up a bank account, getting an EIN, like all of those things, like municipalities provide those. There are a lot of organizations that provide that kind of stuff, like how to, you know, balance your P&L, you know, all that kind of stuff. But Rally does very specifically, we're working at the front end of that. And so for us, it's like where we see people make the mistake, especially when I go around the region, I talk to entrepreneurs. It's like where they make, if I ask them, well, what's your value proposition? They look at me like they don't know what I'm talking about. I'm like, well, what makes you unique? Who are you talking to? Like, who are you serving? What makes you unique and how are you solving it differently and how are you delivering whatever it is you're delivering? They don't even know that question. If I talk to them about, so what's your business model? They can't necessarily walk through that. What's your lifetime value? What's your acquisition cost? Like there's all these fundamental questions that people oftentimes miss. And that's what Rally provides. It's like that foundational stuff. If you're going to start a business and you're going to start from, even if it's one banana, you got to know who your customer is and you got to be able to talk to that customer or potential customer to understand what is it that they care about? What's their pain points? What's their goals? What's the requirements to buy? Like all this front end stuff, this work that you have to do before you even build something. And then once you build that, it's like, how do you test before you spend money and capital on something? How do you test to make sure that that's the right thing before, like I say, you spend your time, your family's time? Because everybody, you know, like you start and stuff, your family's invested in you, your friends invested in you, everybody's invested in you. So at least that love you. And so it's like, how do you honor that? And so you do the testing to honor that, to validate whether or not you're on the right thing. And once you hit that, then what are the things that you do in order to start the business and keep it moving in a way that allows you to make it sustainable, right? And for it to thrive. That's where Rally is uniquely positioned. Early stage people, giving them the keys and the frameworks and the coaching, like founder level coaching that helps them to get from an idea to something that's sustainable.
Okay. How do you use Rally to engage the systems of our city, policy and institutions, to make sure they're expanding possibilities for residents rather than constraining them?
Yeah. So the thing I don't like is when people build solutions and they don't necessarily involve people. Like, the worst thing to do is to build something and then drop it on a resident or someone and just say, yeah, this is good for you, right? And so one of the things that Rally does is like, we try to make sure that we really do things in a way that's grounded in like the truth of like the environment. So let me give an example. Mm-hmm. So we have our co-creation labs where we take themes like economic development or transportation or whatever these issues are, and we say, here's the issue that we have, and we invite residents and individuals to speak into it and say, well, how would you solve this? Mm-hmm. And then they submit an idea on how they would solve it based on their lived experience. And then we take those and look at the ones that are feasible, and then we put them around a table of stakeholders who are within the community that can help them develop, build this idea, and to continue to move it forward. And so like that's one of the things that we do specifically for residents. We try to help the region address priorities that's grounded in real truth, and a lot of times that's constituents' truths. The next thing we do is we try to help the region test things, right? Because like, you're putting capital on the line, you're putting city resources, you're putting reputations, you're putting public trust on the line. And so the question, if you're going to spend money, especially nowadays, like, you just want to be able to justify it, right? And so what we do is we allow like the city of Orlando, for example, to take bets on like unproven new approaches that normally they would not take a bet on, and do it in a way that's de-risked and honors public trust and public money, right? And we pilot those solutions, and then we give them a case study that then shows the efficacy of these solutions and whether or not they work. And then from that case study, then they can double down and say, well, we either want to bring this on or maybe not, because it didn't work out the way it worked out. And so that's the way that we try to like help the city get the right solution and the region get the right solution, and making sure that we invest in the right solutions and not just throwing good money towards bad things.
And I think that Rally, the work that you're doing becomes the underground of how government functions, and people really don't know how government functions, right?
Right.
When I never forget, when I first got elected, it was typically you have to have all these years of experience when we give out, when you win a bid and you win an RFP.
Right.
And I remember we took a leap of faith on an organization that was startup because they had been proven like, hey, this organization can do the work and you have to give people a chance. And so I think that like Rally plays a really a critical piece in how we function as a community. How do you get the exposure for an idea that could, you know, make things better? You know, we think about Block and Lock, right? I will never forget, I met him years before. We were in a church, and I met with the pastor that was trying to build a building and, you know, what's the cost effective and efficiency. And I told him, I was like, you got to do this, 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 and this. And it's that, like, that scaredness, it's the fear of people in government, right? Mm-hmm. And I was talking about it recently, like, social media, unfortunately, puts that fear in people when it comes to, like, dealing with government and how government functions. So it's great to have a buffer, right? Like, that's what Rally really, from my lens,
it's that
buffer between government and that fear of, like, you know, people come and knock at my door all the time. But if they come to Rally, Rally can walk them through the process, get them through the process to say, okay, let's come with you now to government. I mean, I get people that come to my door with all kinds of things. And it's like, that could be great, but like, show me where it works. How does it test?
Right.
It's like, you become that buffer to show individuals that like, your dreams can become reality. Let me work you through that. Let me hold your hand through that.
Yeah, through each stage. Yeah, you're right. Like, I like the city's relationship I really like, because Because we look at like the future ready stuff. It's like the, I think it's like seven categories of how this city imagines itself being in the future and stuff. And so they segment all kind of social environmental issues from connectivity, housing, transportation, et cetera. And so like, but like, it's like the city, like they have a responsibility, like they're working with millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. There's all kind of like regulations and things, like things you cannot do and do, and they have to function well. And then they have to just move slow because that's just the function of city. And so like you said, like that's actually interesting. Like we already understand that. And we, and so we take that entrepreneur who doesn't have, who has an idea, and helps them to put it into a form that's institutional ready, because we understand how corporations are. We understand how municipalities are. And we already have these relationships that then have created systems that allow us to operate within the existing structure so it doesn't disrupt it. Right. Mm-hmm. And so specifically with the city, it's like, oh, Mike Hess's department or sustainability and resiliency. And the way that they work with us in terms of like carving off components of the budget in order to, or creating the budget where we can able to write and get money to entrepreneurs faster because it falls underneath a certain threshold, having all the but the city was very innovative with working within an existing framework of how they need to operate and the regulations that allowed us to be able to bring solutions that normally they wouldn't even talk to into the door, and then make them feel good that they're spending public money in the right way. And then also feel good if it works, not only are they helping residents out or helping people out and helping the city move forward, but they can now take that information and double down and say, like, no, we're buying this because we saw the efficacy of it. It's not $1 million bet that went bad or $10 million bet that went bad. No, it was a $5,000 bet. It actually went bad, or it was a $5,000 bet that actually proved to be good, and now we can spend money on it. I'd rather lose $5,000 than $10 million, and that's kind of how the city like approaches it, right? And I think that that's super, super smart.
You used the word red tape, and I think folks have to understand an institutional. Folks have to understand, like, policies are created because at some point there were no policies. And when there were no policies, you realize the dysfunction and how things could be better. And I'll use the simplest one, and I struggle with it. Parts of my communities, we don't have sidewalks.
Oh, yeah.
We never had planning rules back in the days, right? And so now we build and we have the red tape, so to speak, of how much setback and how far you have to go back on your property. Oh. And when I think about, like, how communities grow, and I'll use it, the simplest place, it's Bentley Street, right by OCPS Ace. Bentley Street has no sidewalks because back in the days there were no setbacks, right? And so people built right to the front of their property.
Yeah. And they want to get all their land, right?
Right. And so, like, when you think about, so, you know, and I'm using that from a policy, like, you know, community perspective, but, like, sometimes red tape is created because we see the, sometimes what may be a devalue, right? Like, man, what could stop us and could prevent us from making sure we can create sidewalks in the future? Well, we've got to create a policy. So I think having an organization like Rally becomes the opportunity to say, okay, we've created these red tapes because, you know, we invested in this and it didn't work and our money went down the drain. And, you know, we, unfortunately, government becomes this bad organization because we saw something that we should have invested in and thought it was a good idea. So I think, like, that's a cool buffer and that you all create. I want you to tell the listeners how they can, what reoccurring activities, platforms, et cetera, that you may have at Rally where people can listen in on?
Well, actually, I want to just expand it to both Rally and the Conduit. Okay. So the Conduit, we very much see the Conduit, the physical space. We said to ourselves, how can this be an asset to the community that it sits in? And so because we're just social entrepreneurs and we're just not all about the dollar. I mean, obviously you have to make money, but for us, it's about the impact first and then the money just kind of follows. So for us, the building, when we looked at out there in the world, we said there's a lot of people doing good work on the ground level, right? Who are running nonprofits, et cetera, who are trying to make the city better. And the thing that they're challenged with, they don't have money. And as a result, they can't find a consistent space that's predictable and consistent to be able to meet and convene their people in order to move to work for it. And we're like, oh, we can use our building. We have an 18,000 square foot building. And so we can use our building for that. And so we have this thing called the advocacy program at the Conduit. So if you just go to the credoconduit.com is the actual website. If you go there, there's a page that's dedicated to the advocacy program where we actually give a membership at no charge for qualified people doing like work like that, like in the community, for 1 year, and they're able to use our space and to meet with their people. And there's quite a few organizations dealing from placemaking to housing to homelessness who are actually using that. And that's a resource that residents can use. They just go on our website, apply, we take a look at it, make sure it fits, and then we reach out to them and establish a membership. So that's the first thing. With Rally, it's a couple areas. One, intro to social entrepreneurship is the easiest vehicle for that. It's a virtual workshop that's 1 hour long that happens every third Tuesday of the month. And people can jump onto that workshop, especially who are aspiring or thinking about entrepreneurship. Even if it's for social entrepreneurs, but even an entrepreneur can benefit, because there we're giving them all the framework in the game in order to be able to start and to think about the business in terms of how you talk to customers, listen to customers, build the business model, test things before you build it. That's a great place to do it. It's free of charge. And then the last thing is our accelerator, which is for much, much more mature companies. Mm-hmm. But it's actually much more competitive, too, because we do a global search. And so we generally get around 300 applications per cycle every year. And on that cycle, we only accept 10 people. Okay. So it's an extremely low acceptance rate because we're looking for people who are much further down the road, meaning they have some traction, they're moving forward, and they're in a position where we can actually pilot them, test their solutions here in our backyard. So if you have residents or businesses who are there, then the accelerator is a good place. If they're just thinking about entrepreneurship or mm-hmm. thinking about being a social entrepreneur, the Intro to Social Entrepreneurship workshop, which is virtual, is the best place for them to be.
Okay. So we're going to do a little bit of rapid fire. You've been vocal about an advocate for homeownership as a tool for community stability. And so it's a weird place because how do you see innovation meeting the overall community needs when it comes to housing?
Yeah. So I mean, this is kind of like, I'm not a segregationist. I think I've said this to you before, or maybe I said it to other people, but I was listening to this thing by Marcus Garvey called Message to the People. Mm-hmm. And he was like advocating on why homeownership matters to people, specifically like Black folks, but just people in general. And so I think that home ownership matters because number one is like homeowners, owners of anything in a society become first claimants. Like everything is geared towards people who have families, who own businesses, own houses, like they get like the best of everything. And so the question is, how can you get there, right, if you want access to these things? And I think that home ownership obviously is the pathway to that. The next thing is, I just think that when it comes to our communities, I've noticed that people who are homeowners treat things different than mm-hmm. people who are actual renters. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying anything bad about renters. I'm just trying to say that they treat things differently. And they view the long-term viability of a community different from the renter. And so because of that, when I look at certain communities, I say, like, could these communities look better if we try to figure out a pathway to home ownership where now people have a stake in the ground, like they're not like passing by trash or stuff and like, whatever. But it's like, no, you're impacting my community, my housing values, et cetera. And so the thing that I've been talking about is like, how do we make that possible? And maybe we make it possible through smaller plots of land where people, instead of starting off and we think of a starter home, now a starter home is like $500,000, like whatever. Like it used to be back in the day, it was super cheap. But like, how do we create maybe homes that are smaller and are kind of locked where the value is doesn't increase too fast, but how do we create smaller plots of smaller homes where people can get into those for, say, even under $100,000? That's theirs, right? So they're just smaller places. You know, imagine like 300-400 square feet, but you own the land and the structure, right? I think that obviously, municipalities play a big part of that because obviously a lot of things need to be done. And I'm not a municipality government wonk, right? That's you. Mm-hmm. I just know, like, hey, I think that we ought to make pathways to home ownership for residents, especially under $100,000. Like, nobody can buy anything worthwhile, worth living in for less than $100,000. Can we create stuff like that? Which is a question for me.
So we're working there. Unveiled a pilot program. We've identified 300 lots in Paramore that can build single family, residential, and or duplex. And we've provided an incentive to get some fee waivers and down payment assistance for residents, right? So we're moving in that space.
Yes.
We also just unveiled an ADU program. So I think that the steps are being taken. I think the hardship that every government faces is what is the best community, right? And because you've got homeowners who feel if you build a $100,000 house, what does that do for the value of my home? And so I think that's like the space that we could have larger conversations, and you know, I might do a housing workshop now, just to talk through what that looks like.
Yeah, I think for me, it's placed in communities where there's overwhelmingly high like rental rates, right?
Okay.
Where and so like you carve that out, like look at areas. This is okay, like this area right here, this 2 mile radius, like it's very dense in terms of residential rentals.
Okay,
and so can we transform, take pieces of this and turn it into like ownership, right? I think that's. At least that's in my mind. That's where it starts. But that doesn't mean it's right.
We're going to have more conversation about that.
So, yes.
As Orlando grows, how do we ensure that economic growth is not just a corporate metric, but actually the results in better opportunities for the people who are already living here in District 5 and the city of Orlando?
I mean, just as simple as answer is like I just believe that corporations and municipalities, like we cannot forget, like, look, if you're a corporation, let's just keep it just on a greed level. Like, you're trying to earn money, you're trying to, and if people can't afford your services or goods, then you don't earn money anymore, right? And so we just have to remember that all boats rise, and I think that for corporations, and they have a responsibility in ensuring that, making sure that they pay people fair wages, making sure, and then making sure that we have like adequate housing. Like, there's so many things that I think that are necessary to help try to create a thriving community. And so, and I think that corporations and municipalities, obviously, corporations have a big part of it.
Okay. So I want to thank you for the work that you do, the advocacy, the role that you play in our communities for entrepreneurs in multiple avenues, not just one.
It's the right word.
I thank you for allowing your lived experiences to create better spaces and opportunities for those in our community.
I'm trying to.
And quickly, tell everybody how they can find you on social media, internet, so they know how to find out about the Conduit and Rally.
CredoConduit.com is the website for the Conduit. That's also our social for Rally. It's Rally, SEA, Sierra Echo Alpha, .com. That's the best place. Socially, like I'm on social media, but I'm not that like extremely active. I'm not one of those.
Thank you.
Catch me doing TikTok videos.
You never know. Hold on, I might have you there. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. Thank you for listeners for listening to Straight From Rose podcast, and I will talk to you all soon.